Glad you're here today. Thank you for coming out. To all of our guests, it's an honor to have you, each of you. We're glad you're here. Last week, we started to talk about the components of our life that we need in order for us to get from here to there. And we had a table up here, and it had two legs on it, and it was a three-legged table. And the two legs were commitment and conviction. Commitment's good. Is that right? Commitment's good. You can't get anywhere really without commitment in life. And we talked about conviction, that it's necessarily have the Holy Spirit to speak to us. And he speaks to the very core of who we are. So we have conviction. And so, but we had this table up here. And on that table, we had two legs, commitment and conviction. And while they're very good, they just weren't enough. There was a third component that we needed to have. And that third component was that we needed to have people around us who would encourage us, for us to position ourselves to be encouraged in order for us to get where we're supposed to go. Today, I'm going to pick up from there, and I want to talk on that subject just a little bit more on some level. I know that every person in this room, you know your life is heading somewhere. Every person, you are going to land somewhere in your future. And some of us are going to get there by design. Some of us are going to get there simply by decision. Some are going to get there by default. Interestingly enough, for each of us, we almost all have been told what we need. We've already been told what we need to do to get from here to there. Some teacher, some parent, some friend, somebody has already spoken to us and talked to us about what we need to do to get from here. And you know what that means? It means that someone in this world, are you ready? Someone in this world already knows what you need to know to get you from here to there. Someone already knows what you need to know to get you from here to there when it comes to your finances, for your financial goals, for relationships, when it comes to children, when it comes to your marriage, when it comes to friendships, when it comes to your job, your profession, when it comes to health, habits, when it comes to addiction. They know because they've already gone down that road and they've already arrived there. Interestingly, you probably already know them personally. And most likely, they've already told you and told me, they've already told us what we need to do or what we need to start to do to get to the place where we want to go. You know what the problem with this is? None of us wants to be told what to do. Can you say amen? You know, if you agree with that, like, raise your hand. No, don't raise your hand. Honestly, because honestly, I'd just make you lie. You know, it's like, I don't mind. Everybody just, none of us want to be told what to do. In fact, let me just tell you, we're experts at having arguments when there's someone who brings up a point to you about what you know you need to do, and yet we get defensive about it, so we start to argue the point that we don't really believe. We know what they're saying to us is true, but we don't want to lose the argument. And so we'll argue and argue to win the argument. Ultimately, though, what they're saying to us is what we need to do to get to where we're supposed to be going, financially, emotionally, spiritually, relationally. It's crazy that we seem to resist the very advice that will help us to get from here to there. It's one of the reasons why people don't like church. Honestly, I'm not offended at that. It's one of the reasons why men particularly, and I come from that perspective in case you didn't realize that, I kind of come from that, men don't like to be told what to do. And so when they go to church, the last thing that they want to do is they want to hear somebody up there telling them how maybe they could do life better. And you know, you get in the car afterwards and wife says, man, wasn't the preacher good today? And here's what he's going to do. He's going to like pick the sermon apart. And he's going to pick the day apart. Well, I didn't really like that song. It was, you know, I was distracted. There was something going on. There was a spill in the carpeting. And the preacher had that crazy shirt on. And you know, I don't know why he's doing that. And, you know, and starts to edit the sermon. And all along, the idea behind that is to discredit the very thing, the very advice that he probably needs to take, but he doesn't want to be told what to do. I get this, guys. He doesn't want to be told what to do, so he actually confronts and discredits the argument that he needs to listen to. In our lives, here's one of the things that we do. Like, we pray, God, show me the way. God, show me how to get there. Show me what to do in my family. Show me what to do in my finances. Show me what to do with my health. Lord, make a way where there seems to be no way. And the Lord's like, man, I've already sent you. Your wife has told you. Your husband's told you. Your kids have told you. Your parents have told you. Your pastor's told you. The mailman has told you. The people in the grocery store have told you. How many more people am I going to have to send before you listen to what I have to say? I'm making this as easy as I can. Today, my hope for all of us is that we will stop resisting the people that are speaking into our lives to help us to move in the very direction that we want to move. We want to move in that direction, and maybe you've already heard, and we'll stop resisting what we've already heard. Because, you know, here's what I know is there are some times when I undermine my own future. I undermine my own success when I refuse to listen. I undermine living out the will of God. And see, listen, here's, God has a great will for your life. He has a great plan for your life. He has a great direction for you. And many times we will simply miss what God has for us because we refuse to listen. We resist listening. I'd like for you to open your Bible with me and turn with me to 1 Kings, the 12th chapter. There's also an insert in the bulletin, or there's a scan there. You could go to youversion.com and read along, and there's an online study that you can be a part of and take your notes there. But let me give you a little bit of background about this story. God establishes the nation of Israel, and first of all, it's a version of theocracy where God would be king, and then he would set up judges, and they would kind of officiate the law, and they would manage the decisions, and that's really the way God set it up. And, you know, in my observation as I was thinking about that this week, you know, it's amazing to me. Like, God set up a nation where he wanted to be king. There wouldn't be a king. He'd just want to be the leader himself, and they would follow his principles and values, and then he would have judges who would officiate what was right and wrong. And I'm like 2,000 years later, there was a country that was established where God would be the leader, and people would follow his values, and then judges, and then... And then like 210 years later, we took God out of the picture, but that's a whole nother sermon. I'll preach that on 4th of July. Okay, but ultimately, the children of Israel, they didn't want God to be their leader. They wanted another king. Like, they're looking at all the other nations. Look, all the other nations have kings and we don't have a king. Give us a king. And God's like, I want to be your king. And he's like, no, we want to be like them. They have a king. We want a king. They have an iPhone. We want an iPhone. I mean, you know, they just wanted to be like everyone else. And so God, he says, okay, I'll give in. I'll allow you to have a king. So the first king that he picks is a man by the name of Saul. And Saul's a warrior, and he reigns for about 40 years. And then David comes along. David's the second king of Israel. And then David reigns for almost 40 years also. And then his son comes along. His name is Solomon, considered to be the wisest man ever. And he reigns for almost 40 years. And Solomon, it's really his intent for his son, as it would be a king passes the throne on to his son, that he would pass it on to his son by the name of Rehoboam. And I'd like everybody to say with me, Rehoboam. And the reason why I want you to say that is because there's going to be a couple of Boams in this story. So I want you to get the king's son. His name is Rehoboam. Now, there's this transition of power. Solomon is setting him up to be king. And then soon, in a few moments, we're going to see where Solomon dies. And we're going to introduce to you another guy by the name of Jeroboam. Everybody say Jeroboam. Jeroboam is not the king's son. Jeroboam is a man who the king has brought on and placed in position as the head of his forced labor people. There's probably about 150,000 people that are involved in forced labor. They're not really slaves, but they're forced to do this. And the interesting thing about that is the reason why he needed so many was because Solomon was maybe the most powerful king on the planet at that point. He was wise, and he had become very wealthy. People from all over the world were coming to talk to him, and he was building the kingdom of Israel was growing and growing and growing. He was building palaces and cities, and so he needed a large force. So Jeroboam, he headed up. Now, that's really quite a large position. He headed up this workforce of about 150,000 people. Now, in the middle of this story, there's a rumor. Somebody in politics, they put out this rumor about Jeroboam, that Jeroboam was going to be king, wanted to be king, that he was going to take Solomon off the throne, or at the transition, he was going to go in as and that would not be a good thing. It would not go well for him, because Solomon would make sure that his son was going to go in. Most likely, it would cost him his life. So Jeroboam runs for his life, and he leaves Israel. And it's right here at that moment where our story begins to pick up at 1 Kings, the 12th chapter. Solomon dies. And there's a transition of power that begins. Verse number one, Rehoboam went to Shechem. Now, Rehoboam is the son. He goes to Shechem. Shechem was really kind of the center of Israel before Jerusalem. Shechem was the capital before Jerusalem became the capital. For all Israel had gone there to make Rehoboam king. When Jeroboam of Nebat heard this, you see, he was still in Egypt where he'd fled during King Solomon's reign. He returned from Egypt. Now, he feels like it's safe enough for him to come home because Solomon is dead, and so he can come back and take his rightful place. Verse number three, so they sent for Jeroboam, and he and the whole assembly of Israel went to Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, and said to him, obviously, and now there's some things that they're going to say, your father put a heavy yoke on us. Your father put a heavy yoke on us. Now, lighten this harsh labor. Now, there's some interesting things about that. There were obviously some people that had some voice, and the leaders of this workforce came to them and said, okay, we want you to lighten this up. This is too much. Your father built too much. He nearly worked us to death. He put a heavy yoke on us, and we will serve you if you lighten this load. Rehoboam answered, go away for 3 days and come back to me. Now, interesting, let me just talk about the building stuff that Solomon was doing. Solomon, he built a lot. First of all, Solomon had a lot of wives. And and so for those of you who are contemplating multiple wives, that's not a good idea. But if you happen to be contemplating multiple wives, here's the deal about it is if you go to the cultures where multiple wives are permitted and they're ordained by law, first of all, let me just say, why is it that men always want multiple wives? There's not a woman on the planet anywhere that would like want multiple husbands. You know why that is? Because women are smarter than men, you know? They get this. But here's the deal is in those cultures, if you had multiple wives, you just didn't like get a bigger house. And if you had five wives, you get five bedrooms. That you don't get away with that. If you had five wives, you have to build each of your wives their own house. And because he happens to be the king, he has to build them a palace. And most of these wives were, if you would, acquired or married in through foreign treaties with other kings. And so he would have to build them a palace, and then he would build them a city around the palace so they felt like they never left home. It would be reflective of the culture where they came from. Yeah, now you're rethinking that, aren't you? Here we go. So there's a lot of resentment in the workforce about all this work that they had to do. Your father's put this heavy yoke on us. Now lighten up on us. And he makes a good decision there in verse number five. He says, give me 3 days to seek some good advice. Now, that's a great decision for all of us. When we have a big decision, let's not rush into big decisions. Let's take some time and think through this. Give me some time to get through this. So the people went away. Verse number six, then King Rehoboam consulted. Now listen, he consulted the elders who had served his father, the wisest man on the planet maybe ever, these wise men who had consulted his father during his lifetime, how would you advise me to answer these people, he asked. Now, they were good men. They had helped Solomon become the most powerful man on the planet. Now listen to their reply, verse number 7. They replied, if today you will be a servant to these people and serve them and give them a favorable answer, they will always be your servants. If you want to get from where you are and you want to get to the place where you think you're supposed to go, if you want to get to where you're supposed to go, serve them. Serve others. Man, that's a great lesson for all of us. That if you want to get to where you're supposed to go, it's not by walking over people and using people and abusing people. It's by serving people. Put their interest ahead of your interest. Put your interest behind them. And not only will you be king if you do that, but when you are king, you'll have a united nation behind you. And you don't want anything, man, to be a king and there be no bloodshed during the transition. You want that to have that unity in the kingdom. Verse number 8, but Rehoboam, listen, rejected the advice the elders gave him. He did what many of us do and what many of us men seem to struggle with. This was advice he needed to hear. It was advice he needed to hear, but it was something he didn't want to do. He heard the advice that he needed to hear, but yet he didn't hear what he wanted to do. And guys, I'm one of those guys, and seriously, we hear what we want to hear, and yet it's not what we want to do. So he knew where he wanted to go, but when he heard their advice, it wasn't the way he wanted to get there. I have another plan. I have another idea. It wasn't the way he wanted to get there. Listen to this. I left some lines there for you. Are you ready? Here, fill these in if you wouldn't mind. Direction, not intention, determines destination. Direction, not intention, determines destination. It's the actions that you take. It's not where you meant to go. It's not what you meant to do. I meant to have a good marriage. I meant to be financially sound. I meant to live a good life. I meant to, but it's the action. The direction you actually take, not where you intended to go, determines your destination. Ultimately, I heard this one recently, and I love this. Discipline, not desire, determines what you will achieve. Discipline, not desire, determines what you achieve. Everybody, seriously, like you talk to everybody and they're like, I want to be wealthy. I want to have good money. But it's the discipline that you have to do to get there. I'd like to have a good job. I'd like to be in leadership. I'd like to be ahead of the game. It's the discipline, but discipline, not desire. A lot of people desire it, but they don't want the discipline that they have to get there. It's not what you want. It's where you want to be that counts. And how are you going to get there? And so his advisors say to him, we know we helped your dad get there. If you'll listen to us, we'll help you get there. But he wants to be king and he doesn't take their advice. Usually, listen, if we do exactly what we want to do, we will end up exactly where we don't want to be. Let me say it another way. Usually when we do exactly what we want to do, we end up exactly where we don't want to be. We end up in another place. That's why in your finances, in my finances, in your life, in your relationship, when we do the things that we want to do, when we eat the things that we want to do, when we behave the way we want to behave with our health, I'm not going to exercise, but I'm going to eat. It's what I want to do. We end up where we don't want to be. And then we're like, I need a miracle. I need the Lord to do a miracle. Seriously, you know what miracle we need? We need for the miracle for us to listen to wisdom and do what we're supposed to do today. Oh, that's good preaching, Brother Paul. Okay. But he rejects their advice. What does he do next? And then this is amazing. Here's what he does next. He does what we do. He goes to his buddies. He goes to his friends. He goes to the people that he grew up around. He goes to the people that are literally on his payroll. I heard a story recently, and I love this. There was a man, he was a CEO, and I read this in a book. CEO was getting ready to have a transition of power, and he was retiring, and a new CEO was coming in. And he sat the young man down who was coming in as the CEO, and here's what he said. He said, Frank, your jokes are about to get a lot funnier, and your jokes aren't that funny. And the young man said, why? He said, because you're paying people to laugh at you now. You're paying people to laugh at your jokes. In fact, their paychecks would be contingent on it. Many times we have people who are around us and they're telling us what we want to hear because they're on the payroll. They're our friends, they're our buddies who came. These guys that are advising Rehoboam, they don't know anything. They've never led a nation. They've never led people before, and yet that's who he goes to. And listen to the words. And he consulted the young men whom he had grown up with and were serving him. He asked them, what is your advice? How should we answer these people back who say to me, lighten the yoke your father has put on us? Given enough time, each of us will find people in our lives who will tell us what we want to hear. If people tell us what we don't want to hear, eventually give ourselves enough time, we'll find people who will tell us what we want to hear. And when you hear what you want to hear and you do what you want to do, you will land where you don't want to land. When you hear what you want to hear and you do what you want to do, you will land where you don't want to land. I'm like, why do we do this? I think probably pride, ego, ignorance, and in the end, we know where we want to go, but we won't land where we want to land. We undermine our own success. We undermine our ability to discern God's will for our lives. We undermine the ability to hear God's plan and follow through. We undermine our families, our finances, our health. We undermine our ability to walk our lives out in God's will. Verse number 10, the young men who had grown up with him replied, these men have said to you, your father put a heavy yoke on us, make our yoke lighter. Now tell them, this is their advice, are you ready? Now tell them, my little finger is thicker than my father's waist. Now there's kind of a cultural statement in this. Let me just explain it to you. The backstory is in this day, unlike here in America, in this day, everyone was usually thin. There wasn't plenty of food. People lived their lives pretty hungry, searching for the next meal. And the only people that were overweight were kings and very wealthy, very powerful people. And so there's an implication here that most likely Solomon was a large guy because he had the wherewithal to be very large. And even if that, he still appeared to be very powerful. And here, he's saying, they're advising him, my father put pressure on you. If you think what my father did to you was something, I'm going to be just much worse than that. My father laid a heavy yoke on you. I will make it even heavier. My father scourged you with whips. This is what they're advising him to say. Go back and tell them, my father scourged you with whips. I'll scourge you with scorpions. 3 days later, Jeroboam and all the people returned to Rehoboam as the king had said, come back in 3 days. Now they've returned. And the king answered the people harshly, rejecting the advice that the elders had given him, the people that had wisdom. And he followed the advice of the young men and he quotes them. My father made your yoke heavy. I will make it even heavier. My father scourged you with whips. I will scourge you with scorpions. So the king did not listen to the people, for the turn of the events was from the Lord to fulfill the word that the Lord had spoke to Jeroboam. Now, jump down to verse number 16, because all of a sudden, I mean, it's starting to align badly. When all of Israel heard that the king refused to listen to the people who were saying, man, this is too hard, and the wise men in the community had advised him, when all of the people of Israel heard this and that he had refused to listen to them, they answered the king, or listen, what share do we have in David? What part in Jesse's son? To your tents, Israel, everybody, we're going home. Look after your own house, king. Look after your own house, David. If you think that we're going to put up with that, we're not. We're out of here. See, they weren't slaves. They were forced to work, but there's a mutiny that's taking place here. And there's a division that takes place in the nation of Israel. There were 12 tribes in Israel. And at this point in time, 10 of them separated themselves. 10 of the tribes separated themselves and removed themselves and became known as the Northern Kingdom. And he was left with 2 tribes. Now, it's amazing to me that he had good counsel, but yet he didn't listen. So the Israelites went home, but as far as the Israelites who were living in the towns of Judah, Rehoboam still ruled over them, but only 2 tribes. Verse number 18, King Rehoboam sent out Adoniram, who was in charge of the forced labor, but all Israel stoned. He sends another guy out to try to get them to become forced laborers. And you know what they did? They stoned him to death. Now, King Rehoboam, he was smart enough that he didn't go in there, but King Rehoboam was with him, managed to get in his chariot and escape to Jerusalem. So Israel has been in rebellion against the house of David to this day. Israel split. Listen, this is 3,000 years ago. Israel split and has not been united since. Wow. The long-term ramifications of somebody who just simply refused to listen because of stubbornness and pride and had a place that I know where I want to be king. I want to be king over a great nation, but refused to listen. Refused to listen to somebody who had counsel. There's someone you know today who has wisdom to how to get you from here to there. There's someone who knows how to get you from where you are to where you need to be. And if you won't listen, you won't ever get there. There's a couple of life lessons I want to give to you. Here you. Doing what you want to do won't ever get you to where you want to be. Doing what you want to do won't get you to where you want to be. If you want to get to where you want to get to relationally, financially, emotionally, spiritually, you're probably going to have to stop doing some of the stuff you want to do and start doing some of the stuff you have to do. Somebody knows what you need to do to get to where you want to be. Somebody knows what you need to do to get where you want to be. There's a few other things. I want you to fill these in. Are you ready? Mature people know when they don't know, and they seek out the people who do know. Mature people know when they don't know, and they seek out the people who do know. They find somebody who understands it. They find somebody who understands business. They find somebody who understands finances. They find somebody who understands relationships. They find somebody who understands addiction recovery. They find somebody who understands the complicated thing that goes on between a husband and wife and between children. They find somebody who does know, seek them out, and they listen to their wisdom. But immature people seek out people who tell them what they want to hear. Immature people seek out people who tell them what they want to hear. You see, I too, at one point in my life, was young and knew everything. You know, I was the smartest young person you've ever met in your entire life. And then as I've gotten older, you know what I've realized? I realized as I get older, I learn every day the stuff I don't know. An immature person stays there. A mature person begins to seek someone out. Here's what I'm going to ask you. Here's a question. If you carry this with you, if you find that person who knows what you need to know, ask them this question. Knowing what you know, what would you do if you were in my shoes? Knowing what you know, now that you're down the road and you've accomplished what I want to accomplish, what would you do if you were in my shoes? I heard this story, and this is from one of my favorite leaders. I heard him tell this story, complete story, years ago, and I retained part of this. It was a young man who was just starting out, and he had the opportunity to meet with a guy who was like internationally known as a great businessman. And so when he would meet with him, he had the opportunity to meet with this guy once a week for lunch. And every time that he would meet with him, he'd ask for advice and he'd pick his brain as hard as he could. And he said, what can you tell me I can do in my life to move forward in my life? He said, There are two kinds of people in this world, this wealthy businessman says to this young man. There are two kinds of people in this world. People who pay interest and people who earn interest. People who pay interest and people who earn interest. People who make it and people who pay it. Which one of those two people are you going to be? Man, that's a question we need to ask ourselves. And which of those two people am I going to be? And I have to tell you, what you don't want to do is you don't want to take advice from somebody on finances who just filed bankruptcy. Seriously, you don't want to take financial advice from somebody who is up to their eyeballs in credit card debt. You don't want to take marriage advice from your friend that just got divorced. I'm preaching good preaching right here. You know, you don't want to take health advice from somebody who is obviously not in good health. You don't want to take spiritual advice from somebody who doesn't have a relationship with God. There's somebody that you know that will give you the advice to get you to where you want to go. That's one of the reasons why last week we started to talk about it, and that's one of the reasons why I have to tell you, we're better together. We're better together. It's one of the reasons why you ought to be in church. Because we love you. We're pulling for you. And yet there's wisdom in the Word of God that somehow I just want to sit down with you and say, there's some things that God has for you. And there's a lot of people, they don't want to come. And I said this a few weeks ago, they don't want to come because my job is to make you uncomfortable. But I'm not going to stand up here and just tell you all the sweet and pretty things and life is full of lollipops and candy canes. The truth is there are some things that we have to do, things that we have to change in order for us to get where we want to go. And it's one of the reasons why I'm going to encourage you to walk out of this room and go outside and sign up for a group. Because there are some people that want to sit in a room with you and you need to sit in a room with them who have some wisdom. And yeah, honestly, you can go back to your job and you can go back to your friends, but you better take a good look at your friends and say, okay, are my friends going in the direction that I want my life to go? Because if my friends are going in the direction I want my life to go, then go ahead and take their advice. But I have to tell you, there are some people with wisdom, some people with understanding, and they'll help you. And they're going to sit in a room with you for the next few months, and they'll talk to you about your walk with God and about your relationships and all the stuff that you're going through, and they'll help you get to where you want to go. One more thing, since I'm here and since I have the microphone and you don't, I'll just go ahead and say, it's one of the reasons why your kids ought to be in a youth group. You know why your kids ought to be in the youth group? You're like, I have a great relationship with my kids. Seriously, wake up. Your kids are not listening to you. They're listening to other people. They listen to not MTV. Man, am I old. Here we go. They're listening to current culture. They're listening to their friends at school. You need somebody else that you can put your kids in a room with that is going to be objective and talk to your young person and say, listen, there's a better way to do this. So let me encourage you to get your kids in a youth group. Okay, I'm going to give you a couple things, some practical things. There's not a lot of room on your bulletin, but I'm going to give you these to write down if you would. Free advice here. Are you ready? Three things I'd like for you to write down. I'd like for you to write down three things that you wish you had been doing already. Three things that you wish you had been doing all along. You might not be able to come up with them real fast. You could take some time to do it, but go ahead and write one or two of them if you can think of them. For some of us, it's obvious, you know? Three things that you wish you had been doing all along. I'll give you the first piece of advice. Are you ready? Go home and do them today. Go home and do them. Don't wait. First piece of advice, go home and do it. Okay, here's the next three things I'd like for you to write down. Write down three things that hinder you from getting to where you want to be. Three things that hinder you from getting to where you want to be. Are you ready? Here's my second piece of advice. Stop doing those things. Now, I know I've given you some blanket advice here. There are some people that want to sit in a room with you. There are some people that you need to have in your life. There are some people that you need to listen to. If you don't know what to write down on that list, if you're like, man, I don't know, I can't figure out any of those things. If you don't know what to put on that list, ask the people around you. Ask your family. Ask your wife. She'll tell you what should be on your list. Ask your husband. He'll tell you what should be on. Ask your kids. Ask your friends. Ask your boss. Ask the people around you, because seriously, they already have that list. Some of them are in therapy over your list. Sad thing about this young man is this young man has a father who is the wisest man in the world. And he grew up hearing his father say very wise things, and yet he missed this. Proverbs 27, verse 12. The prudent see danger. The prudent see danger, and one translation says, the prudent see danger coming and take refuge, but the simple... Another translation says, the naive or the stupid keep going and pay the penalty. You have a conversation with them. Listen, do you know, hey, do you know that direction you're taking right now? Do you know where that's going? Yep. What are you going to do about it? Nothing. What are you going to do when you end up where you didn't want it to go? I'm going to complain about it and blame someone else. I mean, that's what we do. We blame other people. Listen, there's someone that you know who knows how to get you from where you are to where you want to be relationally and spiritually, financially. There's someone that you know that knows how to help you get to God's plan for your life. So if you know somebody like that, don't be 5 years down the road regretting where you are, 10 years down the road regretting where you are. Allow God to speak through other people to you. It's the reason why I'm saying it again. We're better together.